What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
Let's have a discussion about what the USGA and the US Open owes to the spectators.
I think that he's sipping Polyjuice Potion. He is cat out there, and that's why we're seeing such great stuff from my guy, Rick. We've been talking about him all year.
Give me hell for this. The Seltzers, baby. I mean, we were just all
Seltzer
in.
Simus, he's back. The Nooner
guy. Back and better.
And I think that was the lever, right? It's like, if they wanted to pull on that one and say, like, let's just crank the greens up and make it firm, that's where the six shots would have gone up really, really quickly.
All right, welcome back. It is Mudball Monday. It is US Open week. It is currently Sunday. And we are getting into some live action. Henry Schimpf on site this week. I was absent. We're going to be asking some questions today and getting deep into the game. Henry, how are you? What's been going on?
I'm fantastic. I'm very excited to be back in Texas. Loved my time at LACC. Didn't love my time in LA quite so much. I enjoy visiting LA, but I think every time I'm there, there's just a little bit more of a, you know, within 30 minutes, I'm just like, what are we doing out here? Like, what are these people? Like, what is this place? You know, LACC withstanding, I mean, just such a immaculate golf course. So fun to be out there, watch guys play. But yeah, LA is just a different animal. It's not really for me, to be honest with you. So excited to be back in the 160 degree heat of Texas. And I know you're going through the same in Florida. So let's get straight to the dirt. Let's not waste any time here. The drinking, the eating, the reading, the thinking. We hit it every week on Mudball Monday, and you'll lead us off, Walker. What do you got?
Oh, boy. And right back at you. I'm expecting some fire dirt this week. Like, I know, I feel like you're kind of holstering to this take of California weather, which I respect, by the way. But in California is great dirt to be had. So I'm excited to hear what you have there. Starting off with my dirt this week, it's been heavy on the variety. I mean, more heavy than usual. As you know, I'm like a water sicko and I drink coffee every morning. But past that, I mean, I got into some, gosh, dude, I was at this wedding this weekend. So I'll toss a video up on the story, but heavily, heavily, heavily dabbling in the topo, both like the still water, the sparklings, and give me hell for this, the seltzers, baby. I mean, we were just all
Seltzer
in.
Simus, he's back. The Nooner
he's
guy.
Back and better. You know, it was funny. Like, I felt like I was being handed drinks all night, and I just kept being handed seltzers. Like, it simply is what it is, you know? They're already cracked. I'm going to drink them, you know? So,
I
that was fun.
I mean, you can hand those off to somebody else. It's like hot potato with seltzer.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm handed a drink, I'm putting it down. I think that's the nicety. So, as any routine drinker knows, like, you shouldn't really be mixing it up a lot. Like, you kind of pick your guns and stick to them. And that was not at all what was happening. So it was kind of a recipe for yakking in an Uber somewhere, which wasn't what occurred. So very thankful, but great night.
Who knows that?
I can think of a scenario or two, but I'll leave that for offline. Regardless, yeah, it was just like heavy variety. It's been super fun. I've missed my Mudball half calf. I kind of took a caffeine break this weekend, which honestly was kind of needed. Like, I've been running pretty hard and drinking a lot of coffee. And as I've said before, you know, in these little breaks where I get to get away from the caffeine for a little bit, like, I always come back better, and I'm glad that I took a break. So excited to get on my Mudball half calf tomorrow morning. It's going to be a good time. In terms of eating, as you know, we share this take wholeheartedly. Pizza is something that I don't dabble in as much as I used to, but less is certainly more. And high quality za is something that is just, it's a must hit. It's like once a month, maybe, but you should certainly be eating a really good pizza at least four or five times a year. And in the case of Saturday evening, it was just like pizza after pizza after pizza. They were dishing out just like hot Neapolitan pizzas with some nice char and pistachio margarita, some nice like sausage and cherry pepper pizzas. It was just fantastic. So we were putting those down heavy. And I mean, I've had a really nice assortment of eating. I had this wonderful breakfast on Saturday. I had a Cuban breakfast sandwich, a little bit of Cholula that just made my life so much better. It's just wonderful getting into something like that. And then had breakfast with my parents and my grandparents this morning. By the way, happy Father's Day to everyone. Shout out to all the wonderful fathers out there. But it was great to have breakfast, and they brought some of their fruits and vegetables from the garden and the farmer's market. So that was just awesome. Like whenever you can get a hold of fresh fruit and vegetables, it's just like the best. So loving that. Reading. I'm actually diving into a book for the second time that you read recently, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. Read that on the flight there and the flight back. It's a really important book to read. Like I think everybody should at least take a look at what's in there. And I always try to be cautious in regard to faith because I respect everybody's view on faith, and you kind of meet people at very different places in their journey. So as far as this podcast goes, I find it challenging to like tackle faith head on, but it's a faith-based book, and it certainly tackles some of the questions that we're all facing, which is like, God, Henry talks about just the crunch for time, and we often, all of us, find ourselves so hurried. And there's some really great bits in that book too. Kind of mend in and help you clean up some of the things that are hanging loose. One of the things that I thought about in regard to the book was like contrast training. Like we love the hot and cold. There's so many examples of contrast training that are really beneficial for us. And an example that I got from this book is just like purposely forcing yourself to kind of sit when you feel hurried, whether it's in traffic or in the grocery store or whatever. And that has been something that I took with me and that I'll implement this week. And that certainly feeds into my thinking a little bit. But God, I mean, so much is going on at LACC, and excited to get into that. So carrying on with thinking, the author of the foreword, his name is John Ortberg. And I was kind of looking for some podcasts that were different than what I normally listen to this week. And John does these really cool
Which you
10-minute.
find people shouldn't do. You should just keep listening to the tie. That's just my two cents.
You should. And these, Monday bangers, like you know what you're listening to on Monday. That's, you got to check in the box. So the other six, you can do whatever the heck you like, except for Fridays where we just post, we're posting episodes. So you got 2 days
Heat.
knocked out.
Fire.
And we got some heat coming, by the way. So keep you posted. But John puts out these really good 10-minute, like I use it in the morning, like morning meditations on faith, and I've found them just wonderful, super refreshing. So that'll kind of lead my thinking. And then on the back end, I mean, gosh, I'm so excited to dive into it today. But like Gordon Sargent's Lip Out, or I don't even know what you want to call that on 18. It's like the Joe Daly. You know the video, the famous video of the guy. Older gentleman, his name was Joe Daly at Q School. I think it was at PGA West or something. And like center
Bounce
cut, and it
hits the
just
cup.
bounced right out.
Yeah,
That
it's some
happened to
bullshit. I
Sargent
had that
on
happen in a
18.
tournament one time. My God, I was mad.
I feel like you can't, I mean, obviously you can be mad, but it's just kind of, it's a statistical anomaly. That's all it
It
is.
is what it is.
It is what it is. And then I definitely want to cover, there's not much to cover here, but the DJ glitch on six, like one of the most interesting holes in golf, but never in my life would I imagine that one of the best players in the world would somehow find himself 193 yards off the tee behind the only thing that you cannot be behind on a hole with what, 120 yards of width, and no coverage to show for it. I mean, just no idea how he got there. So, yeah, that'll wrap up my dirt. Henry, back to you before we just absolutely rip this thing apart.
Yeah, drinking. Speaking of our friends at Good Walk, they were providing the goods, as you may say, at the US Open this week. And Matt, how exciting is that? I walk up right as I arrive on the 10th hole on Friday, watching our guy, Ty Guy, Barkley Brown, walk up, his girlfriend standing there drinking a cold brew. And I just kind of take a peek and I was like, oh, it's Good Walk, which is just so fun to see. So shout out Good Walk providing coffee this week at the US Open. Of course, today, have an early flight, get back at around 11:30. And I was like, do I really need a second coffee? Maybe, maybe not. But you know, there's just nothing wrong with gaming a mud ball half calf at 11:30 a.m. Only take in, 100 milligrams of caffeine or something like that. Just a rocket ship into the afternoon, but I'll be sleeping like a baby by 9 p.m. So that's why we created the mud ball half calf with our friends over at Good Walk Coffee. So go check them out, goodwalkcoffee.com. Use code the tie. It's all great. Moving into the summer, they've got cold brews, they've got nitro cold brews, all the stuff. So check it out. Recommend. That'll wrap up my drink. Rolling into eating. Had one of the more interesting eating days of my life yesterday, just like true fire and ice. So Phil's in the morning, coffee, great stuff. And then straight with one of my friends to a little dim sum action. Now, something tells me you're not a dim sum guy, or at least you're not super involved in the dim sum game.
This actually needs to go on the hit list because I have never had a proper dim sum experience. Can't believe I'm saying that, but it is true, and would love if you would show me the ropes.
Well, yeah, I say that not as like some, victory lap or anything, but it's like if you're not frequenting, San Francisco, LA,
There's no
kind of
point.
West Coast, it's just you're not really finding proper dim sum in Charlotte, North Carolina, or
Or Central
Tampa's a
Nebraska.
maybe. Yeah, Central Nebraska, that's a hard no. But anyway, I've gotten into the dim sum game, man. Like some, and I've had a couple of people tell me that I'm not as into, I like it all, but some of my favorite things are not the most traditional ones. It's kind of some sleeper picks, but yeah, dim sum's just an awesome way to kick off your day. It's a perfect, like, just hammer a massive dim sum meal at like 10:30, go out to the golf course and just walk around all day. It's perfect. You're ready for dinner. So speaking of dinner yesterday, little cookout action with some friends, a couple guys playing in the open and some other people around. So just like all American burgers, a couple brownies, chips, like just completely opposite ends of the spectrum. You got Chinese dim sum and then just straight up burgers on the grill. So a really nice way, to create some contrast in my day with the eating there. But that'll wrap it up for this week. Rolling into reading, back on another book about the Himalayas. And I feel like this is the book I need. This is the fair warning. Lost in the Valley of Death is the name of it. And there's like a subtitle as well of, it's like obsession and death in the Himalayas. And I definitely have the obsession piece sorted out. I don't know if the death, if I really need to enter that one into the chat of my life. But yeah, I've read like five or six different books on Everest and the Himalayas now. And I know at some point in my life, I want to go to Kathmandu, maybe make it to base camp. But I think this is the one that I really needed to enter into it because this is kind of showing me that bad stuff can happen when you start dabbling in the Himalayas. So, it's been a really good read so far, but yeah, a true kind of fair warning to me, as I continue the obsession with the Himalayas. So keep you posted on how that one goes. It's been a really good read so far. Finally, my thinking. I had, a couple different things I was working on this week. Was going to go the serious route. But of course it's Mudball Monday, so why would I do that? I'll tell you what I've been thinking about. This is honest. It's bullshit, but it's honest. What does Ricky have in that mug? The thing that he's been carrying around all week? I mean,
Mud.
there are two leading options, right? It's the Mudball half calf, of course, because it's just rocket fuel for good golf. And then I'm dead ass serious. There is a chance of, a poly juice potion situation. Now, what I'm curious about, because it's cat,
Great take, by the
obviously.
way.
If he's sipping poly juice potion, it's cat.
Who is
But
it? Yeah.
here's the thing. Here's the thing. Poly juice potion, the way you work it out, and I don't want people to read too far into this, please, but you got to get someone's hair to put in there. Mr. Clean. Like,
God,
and so, and
that was
again,
awesome.
please, please do not read too far into this of where the hair could be coming from. But I think that he's sipping poly juice potion. He is cat out there. And that's why we're seeing such great stuff from my guy, Rick. We've been talking about him all year. How good would that be, dude? How good would it be for Rick to come back, win the Open in SoCal? I'm gonna stop right there because I don't want to jinx the thing. I've got it on right now. Fucking A, you just hit a terrible shot on the fourth hole, but it would be pretty darn cool. But yeah, so that'll wrap up my thinking. It's either half calf or Polyjuice potion, maybe a mix of the two. I think Cat is actually the one that's out there swinging the stick. But you know, Ricky's name would go on the trophy, and that would be pretty darn cool. So that'll wrap up my thinking, and with that, I'll toss it straight to you now that we're talking about the Open, to do a little Q&A and some conversation around LACC, one of our absolute favorite courses. It's been an interesting week. It's definitely been not fully what people would have expected. But yeah, I was out there for, you know, a full 2 days, so certainly have some takes and curious to hear what you're interested in.
There's a ton to cover today, and I do want to get into just how people have received this open, because there's been a lot of really interesting and valid, frankly, things on both sides. But being that you were there, I do want to firstly just tackle, like, you're our planner. I mean, you are just like psychoanalyzing how to attack something like this, anything like this. So take me through, at what point you were realizing you were going to the US Open, and like how you broke that down, the things that you wanted to see on the golf course, and kind of what your vision was for those 2 days.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I'd been thinking about going for a while, but and had kind of like pulled off. And then when, you know, we released an episode about 5 days ago with Conrad Ray, Stanford men's golf coach, my former coach. If you haven't checked that episode out, you should definitely go do that.
Hammer.
But so when four of the guys on the Stanford team made it, I just was like, man, I have to get out there and see that. So I think that was the thing that really pushed me to go. And then in terms of like what I wanted to see, I think that there are a few holes in particular that are so darn cool that I just wanted to see, you know, how they set it up, how the guys tackle it. You know, the sixth obviously comes to mind, the 15th, definitely some of the big par fours as well. I think that the big par threes, the big and the little par threes, were what I found most interesting. Watching guys play the seventh, watching guys hit off the 11th, the entire golf course. There was a lot of really cool stuff to see, and yeah, the reception has been very interesting, and I have plenty of takes there and can field any questions necessary. But yeah, in terms of just straight up what I was interested in, it was certainly, you know, some teammates, and then just how the golf course was playing, basically, because it's, you know, we're not rankings guys. I mean, if you haven't checked out the tie course reviews, go do that. You
Like
can kind
two
of sort
plugs.
through how we like to, yeah, I mean, fuck, just pay yourself, man. Like, if you get content out there and just feed the beast.
No cash on the table.
But yeah, we talk about this. Like, we don't like to rank golf courses. However, to the degree that I will say a course is, you know, top tier, bucket A, whatever, like LACC unequivocally, like if you don't think it's a top whatever course, like you don't quite get it. This place is just off the hook. And so seeing how the pros played it and how they set it up for the pros to try to make it difficult. Again, that'll be kind of another topic for conversation, is kind of what I was most interested in.
Yeah, let's lead down that line. So I guess the thing that I'm most interested in immediately is, as a competitive player, most of the time you just show up and play a course that has been worked on. You know, the maintenance crew has put in a ton of effort to make this thing like ready for competition, and you analyze it and you play it. And that's what many of the players in the field did this week. But if you haven't, I'll go ahead and give a third plug. Like, if you haven't listened to some of the tie course reviews or House Theory Thursday that we've done on LACC, like, we have gone through this at length, what we think the LACC brings to a US Open, right? But what I'm curious about is, when you arrived on site, you got to walk all 18 holes, as you mentioned offline. What was different than A, when you saw it first, and B, what you expected it to be, whether that's mowing lines or just slight adjustments made to the golf course that made it ready for a US Open?
So I think, and this potentially feeds into the whole, well, was it hard enough this week? Which I, you know, looking at the leaderboard right now, you got two guys at 10 under, one guy at 9, one guy at 7. I mean, fifth place is 5 under. Like, come on. It's not like it's playing easy by any means, but we'll set that aside for a moment. I think maybe the biggest thing for me that was not necessarily surprising, but just like my first takeaway was like, honestly, the course didn't look very different than it typically does in terms of mowing lines, just general preparation. The rough was certainly a bit longer, but in spots, it was actually not very long. I really think, and this will kind of be my core take today in terms of like, anyone's wondering, like, why is it just not that hard? It's all about firmness out there, firmness and speed of the greens. And I think they just kind of made a fairly conscious decision that, like, they're not going to go crazy, you know? And, like, what I personally, I just don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think you need to be chasing par or anything like that. There's just nothing wrong with letting the course be what it is and not feeling the need to go absolutely crazy with the firmness of the greens and whatnot. But that to me is the biggest thing. Like watching some on TV, and then obviously also being out there watching balls hit the green and react. Like, it just wasn't really that firm, and that it was difficult around the greens for sure. Like, if you were short-sighting yourself in the rough to the wrong hole locations, and a lot of this goes to undulation as well, but it was just flat too firm to really have any sort of opportunity to score. But into the greens, anything more than, 50, 60 yards, guys were able to kind of hit that nice one hop and stop, even hit some balls that were spinning back a little bit. And I think that was the lever, right? It's like, if they wanted to pull on that one and say, like, let's just crank the greens up and make it firm, that's where the 6 shots would have gone up really, really quickly. And your winner would have been, 300, 400, 500. Maybe they could have even kept it around par. But I think they just made a pretty conscious decision that they wanted to use some of the harder hole locations, some of the really interesting ones. Because, here's the thing is like, take the 15th hole, for example. Played at 81 yards yesterday to that super skinny little pin in the front right. Like, this is where you got to really think critically about this. You can't have both. You cannot have those greens be rock firm and then have 3 yards in front of the hole and 3 yards behind the hole and say, let's have fun. It's just stupid at that point. And that's where I think the USGA has just decided over time, like, we're just not doing this anymore, guys. We're not doing the whole go to these amazing golf courses and then have guys walk off saying like this was dumb, because it was dumb. The seventh at Shinnecock, the year that they, dare I say, lost the golf course. It's like, that's one of the coolest holes in the world, and you can't even play it because you made it so firm. Like, why would you do that? So I'm getting long in the tooth here, but that was my biggest takeaway from the course, is that they didn't change all that much. It looked a little bit more baked out. They definitely didn't use the sprinklers as much as they usually would. But they did keep them on around the greens just enough to where that's why the scores have been a bit lower. But again, only a bit. I mean, 5 under is fifth place. That's just not that low, man. It's not that low.
You confirmed an inkling that I had in that LACC has a few greens, like I think 13, obviously 11 has some pretty good tilt to it. I think 16, where that green kind of falls away from you, where, there is some movement to the greens, but it's largely the existing slope that they sit on, frankly.
Precisely.
Other than that, one, for example, 12, for example, I think 15 is just kind of a 14 and 15 seem like they were greens that were built more so than others on the course. But what makes LACC so interesting is, like, take a look at the Sunday pin positions. They were floating all over Twitter. They won't be hard to find. And you'll watch the coverage today and see them yourself. But you cannot have those pin positions if the greens are rock hard. And I have been so confused by the backlash at the USGA. What are we seeing here?
Rory almost made like an 100-footer. God bless it.
What hole?
Five.
Okay.
Would have been electric.
I've been so confused by the backlash at the USGA. It seems like we're showing our cards a little bit and we just like to be pissed off at whatever the outcome is. But if anything were to be reined in, it was the greens, just so that you can have interesting pin positions. Like, I think about 12. The pin position on Sunday at 12 is like, I mean, you could spit from the front edge to that pin position. You'd probably spit past it. And that is simply impossible if the greens are super firm. Like, you would have guys who are hoisting balls up in the air with wedges, trying to land it 5 feet behind the pin, and would still find their way into that back bunker. And that's not exciting for players. It's not exciting for fans. And if that's what brings you back to par, you've lost the plot. Your priorities are out of line. So I want to get that cleared up. And there's some other things that we can tackle to kind of mend in some things that are valid in terms of like the backlash, I guess. Anything
yeah,
to
those
add
are really good thoughts. Yeah, a couple things that I'll throw on top of that. So great commentary on the hole locations. Like, you just simply place yourself out of using certain hole locations that you want to use by making the greens too firm, because it just kind of becomes silliness. Like, I go back to the 15th. It's like, you want to do that. You want to have that 80-yard hole with the super skinny pin where guys were, by and large, playing away from it even so. But then all of a sudden, when it's too firm, it's just like, what exactly are we doing? You know, like, this is just kind of ridiculous. Like, is it kind of cool and interesting? Yeah, but like, this is just kind of dumb, you know? So you don't get to use those hole locations that people really want to see. And then the other thing that I'll say is, you know, you listen to the announcers, and some guys, sometimes there's good insight, and sometimes it's just like, are you guys really watching here? Did you really do like any prep work on the course this week? Because, for example, the 14th hole, just an incredibly cool par five, kind of the reverse cant fairway that runs to your left with the fairway, or the hole rather, dog legging to the right. You know, it's firm enough out there that, speaking with a couple of the guys who were playing in the tournament, they were like, hey, look, that fairway is effectively about 15 yards wide this week, you know,
and everything. And it has to be moving left to right. Like, you can't exactly just draw it in there.
Right. You hit, like, you know, watching one of my buddies out there. I mean, perfect high cut over the bunker, and it stayed in the fairway on the left side by about 3 yards. And there are a lot of examples like that. And so, again, that's where this whole conversation is like, and this is my biggest thing on the U.S. Open anymore, is the lines are so, so fine between kind of that ideal anymore to me, like 5 under is the new even, because golf has just, guys have gotten better. Equipment's gotten better. Like, anyone that doesn't just kind of take that straight up is just lying to themselves. It's harder to keep the scores at even in 2023 than it was, you know, even in 2012 or 2013. We used to be able to do that at Marion and Olympic Club. It's just really, really hard to keep the guys there. Now, could it still be done? Potentially. But the line between even and 5 under and 5 under and 10 under is so, so fine. And to me, like, the story of this week is really just that I think what's so hard about the U.S. Open for the USGA is setting up that first round. Like, that's all it is. Because basically, if the first round plays the way that it did on Friday or Saturday, you're kind of right where people want it to be, at just a few under par. But that's the difficult part, is deciding, like, what exactly do we want to do here? Do we want to kind of get on the edge and potentially have it start to get away from us? Or do we just, like, go in really soft, and then on a course that doesn't quite have as much length and is a little bit wider, you run that, you know, quote unquote risk of having some 62 shot? Because I think that's, so kind of wrapping this all together, it's like, everyone's talked about it this week. It's pretty wide out there. You know, this is not tiny fairways US Open where it's just like, hey, look, it's hard just to begin with, because you got to hit it straight. And if you don't, it's just going to be really brutal. If the greens aren't really firm at LACC, like, you're in the fairway most of the day, and you do get a lot of short shots. So there are going to be a lot of birdies made. And I think that's just what I go back to, is like, that first round, if the greens are a bit soft, then all of a sudden, or maybe, you know, just not as firm as they would like, all of a sudden you're going to get some guys that shoot really low numbers. But, you know, it was really just a couple guys that went low that first day. And if you just kind of add a couple shots, a few shots to everybody's score that day, all of a sudden, like, the scores are more or less where people would like them to be, you know?
I do want to retract, not retract, but go back on my take about driving that I had last week, and that it has proved itself to be a little bit more difficult of a driving course than I had expected. Like, holes like, you know, two are pretty open, but once you start getting to like 12, 14's a really good example. 17's a really good example.
16, like, yeah.
16 as well, right? And those holes are, you know, you don't need 14 drives to be incredibly challenging for a golf course to present a really good driving test. You just need, you know, 6 or 7 drives to really ask a specific question of you that rewards a good drive. And I think LACC has done that beautifully. It hasn't been like a whiff of a driving test.
And the big question, really had to put it together. The big question becomes, it's not what is the width, it's what's the net width or the effective width, because there's so many of them. It's like, yeah, 60 yards wide, it doesn't mean a thing. You know, if you don't have the right curvature and it doesn't land in the right part of the fairway, it's not going to stay in. And so it doesn't matter what the boundaries themselves are. Google Earth would tell you different. But what matters is where the ball actually is going to end up.
Yeah. Let's transition a little bit. So one thing I'm really curious to hear from your perspective now is, because you've been there this week and you've also watched it on TV, let's have a discussion about what the USGA and the US Open owes to the spectators. Like, the US Open is largely a TV product. You know, if you want to go to the US Open, that's fantastic. It's an unbelievable thing to go do and be a part of. But what do they owe the person that chooses to go and spectate that tournament by themselves?
That's a really good question. I hadn't thought about it that way, but I will say, if I'm going to go watch a US Open, I feel that part of why I'm there is it's not full-blown carnage. Like, I'm going to stay reasonable today. Part of me wants to just be like, come on, baby. Like, let's see 82s. But
I'm not going to egg you on.
What I think that the USGA does ever so slightly owe is a couple opportunities for that to be in play. A couple hole locations, cheeky little shots where all of a sudden it's like, yeah, if you don't pull this one off, if you don't hit a shot on the first go, like, it can get gnarly. And maybe that's the one thing that was missing a little bit this week, is just a couple more opportunities could have been taken to say, like, hey, look, you got a, like, a little 150 yard, 140 yard par three here. And like, if that green was a little bit more baked out with a little bit more of a tucked pin, now the people are getting what they want. You know, it could get a little bit silly out there. But I think that that's where it goes back to this firmness of the greens. Like, they just decided to stay just reasonable enough to where, you know, I just didn't see that much craziness going on necessarily. And to me, again, I really like that question of what do they owe you? I think that to some degree is what people are asking for. Any more, I think it's rather disenchanting, just the long rough and, oh, you're just beating on wedges all day and chopping at 60 yards up the fairway. It's just not that interesting. But it is pretty interesting when guys have wedges in their hands and then all of a sudden you're kind of like ping-ponging it around the green if you don't hit that wedge really nicely. And that's the one thing that I think could have been a little bit more done up with the golf course this week.
Is there a specific hole that you hoped that would happen on? I visualize, like, you know, guys at the drink cart or, you know, at the vendor tent saying, like, dude, have you seen what's happening on 11 right now? Like, that shit is crazy. You have to go over and see it. Was there a hole that you were, like, hoping for?
6 was one of the best ones to spectate this week and one of the best opportunities for that. And it wasn't soft, like, you know, literally or figuratively. It wasn't soft, but that's the one that there could have been some serious teeth on. And it just wasn't, it wasn't that bad. You know, there was not some feeling of like, oh my God, guys are getting to 6 and they're like, oh shit. Like, if I don't pull this wedge shot off just perfectly, then don't get me wrong, it's a tough wedge shot, but there was not like any carnage going on there. And I think that could have been one of the opportunities of like, let's give it to them a little bit here. Let's make this thing interesting. And for guys of that level, this is such an important clarification. Like, I heard some, I mean, you always hear just some of the worst comments of all time at golf tournaments. But
like soccer parents.
Yeah. Like a couple of guys walk around like, I think I could shoot 85 out here. I'm like, listen, fellas, like, you have zero clue how hard this golf is. You know, like, the pros make it look like it's just a shade easier than people want it to be. Like, your average player, I mean, having spectated a few US Opens at this point, like, it's just, you almost wish that they would go stage, you know, some like not even bad golfers, like send
a 4 handicap.
Exactly. Like, send a dozen 4 handicaps out there and see what they shoot. It would be big numbers. I mean, people just don't have enough respect oftentimes for how good these guys are, and they start saying, oh, it's just soft, it's easy. It's like, you know, the holes that ended up playing downwind, like the 16th yesterday, for example, it was like a back middle pin and straight downwind. It's like 540, so it plays super short. Like 540, you know, your average guy is probably going to have between pitching wedge and 8 iron in. But I mean, you had to hit it. I mean, it needed to be a full swing at whatever it was on the button, landing 5 paces on, and you maybe would stop. There was plenty of that going on. 17, like, you know, so direct quote from our guy Barkley last night. He said that a volunteer said to him in the second round that only one player had hit it in the left rough on 17 and kept it on the green. You know, 17 has the bunkers that run along the front left, runs off of them. So left rough, obviously just screwed. And Barkley's response was like, I mean, I'm shocked that even one person was able to do it. You know, there's plenty of that out there where it's like, if you're not in the right spot, it's not happening, you know? And so that's where I think it's important to kind of bring things back to earth. Like, these guys are so freaking good. And that to me is 75% of it, is just like how good the golfers are, as opposed to just not making the golf course completely silly.
One of the things that we take for granted on golf courses that are highly regarded, like LACC, is the way these routings create these kind of meeting spots, different green complexes kind of nudging up against each other, different tee boxes, all kind of coming together in one place. And I'm using this as a segue to talk about the complaints about this being a heavily corporate spectated event. And I saw some tweets this week saying that, you know, obviously the corporate tents, if there were going to be corporate tents, we're going to get, you know, some pretty sweet spots to look out over the golf course. Walking it the first day, all 18 holes, did you struggle to access points on the golf course that you were eager to see? Or was it pretty easy to get where you wanted to go?
So this is where I'll be just completely objective, no agenda, horrible viewing experience. Not just, and I think it's so think about like 8 and 17, for example, like some of the cooler holes out there, but 17, let's use that one. Very little width between the second and the 17th. You know, there's an argument to be made that you could join those two fairways, and I think at times they've done that. So you can't put people between there. And then the right side of the 17th, the whole thing is a barranca. So it's like, where do you put the spectators? Do you just make the barranca like spectator land, or do you want that to be in play for the golf course? My answer is certainly like, you want that in play. You want players hitting it in there and having the full penalty of what comes with hitting it at a barranca, not what happens when a bunch of people walk through it. And so then all of a sudden you're just having to like look across the way. And there are a lot of examples of that where, just by the nature of the golf course, you just can't like get your eyes on the spots you want to, because you can't get quite close enough. And then the other thing that goes along with that is it is just kind of a complex routing. And so getting people around it is complex from a standpoint of, you know, think about all the holes where you end up walking on just a 8 foot wide bridge from one place to another. You can't have, even if it's not nearly as many as usual, you can't have thousands of spectators using the bridge from the ninth tee to the ninth green. You know, that just doesn't work. And there are a lot of examples of that out there. And so while it was a bit disappointing, I guess, from a spectator's perspective, I think if you just kind of put your big boy pants on and say, like, hey, look, let's look at this through the lens of like the people that had to lay it out. Do I have some bones to pick here and there? Potentially. But by and large, set aside the like corporate tent stuff, like, it, I would not want any piece of that job of like, how are we going to kind of route this golf course and get spectators around it? Because there are a lot of spots where it's just pretty land constricted, and it's a complete conundrum trying to think of how you're going to get people around. So, long-winded way of saying, spectating experience by and large, pretty darn tough. But I think that at least 60 to 70% of that is just purely the piece of property and the golf course itself. The corporate environment, we'll get there, but that's kind of a different can of worms altogether. I think it's important to put that on the record first of like, this is a hard place to sort out. Like, how do you get spectators around this thing?
Very healthy take. Do you want to dive into corporate stuff, or do you want to? Oh, let's dive in.
Let's dive in.
So, yeah, go ahead.
I've got two thoughts here. The first one, I mean, and I kind of led the episode with this, LA is LA. And there is just the vibe of people of like, yeah, it's LA, too cool for school. And I felt a lot of that, like just people out there that look, nothing wrong with them. I don't dislike anybody just off the bat, but you could just kind of feel a little bit of like they weren't going to be getting super into this thing to begin with. I just think that that's a little bit of that SoCal LA vibe. I definitely felt a big piece of that. Now, on the corporate front, yeah, it's kind of a tough scene if we're being completely honest, because I think one of the tougher things you hear is that the members ended up buying back a lot of the tickets, which didn't allow them to be available to the public quite as much, and then they didn't end up even being used. And so, and again, this is all like a lot of this is speculation, so I will fully own that like this may or may not be true, but the feeling of it in terms of what it actually was like out there substantiates some of what you've heard, that there just weren't as many general spectators out there. And it, without a doubt, it just kind of felt flat. Now, also important to say, probably, like our direct comparison at the moment is Boston last year, where obviously fans are super into it. And it couldn't be more different. So I think that's probably important to think about as well. But the corporate part of things, where I really net out on the whole thing, if we're being completely honest here, is like, and I tweeted some stuff about this week. I don't think we should let perfection get in the way of progress. Like LACC didn't let anybody see this place for 75 years. The fact that they hosted the US Open, and a lot of people might say like, oh, you old fuddy-duddy, like get out of here with this bullshit. But to me, the fact that they decided to do a US Open and this thing is on TV and albeit a small number of people, but people were able to get out there and see the golf course is a massive improvement, because I think this is one of the coolest places in the country that hardly anybody had seen. And so we're heading in the right direction. But first go, things could have been better, without a doubt.
Seminole opened up a couple of years ago to cameras. Now LACC will have Cypress open up in a couple of years for the Walker Cup. So you're right. That's a very healthy take as well. One of the counters that I saw often, and we'll get into the darkness here. That's kind of the next thing that I want to hit. But one of the counters that I saw often on Twitter today was just, if this is true, if the golf course was poorly designed for spectators, et cetera, why is it hosting the US Open? And I think that is a very fair question to ask. However, something that we've all been begging for is US Opens on golf courses of high architectural integrity, which is what this place is. And I have thoroughly enjoyed the quality of golf and the way this golf course has been played, the way it's been presented. And I think that that take falls in the vast majority of folks. So how do you navigate that going forward? Like, let's toss, LACC in the trash can. Like, going forward, if we were to entertain venues that were architecturally significant, historically significant, but weren't necessarily suited for large amount of spectators. I mean, Marion's a great example. It's 152 acres. Like, what can you really do there? And you can do all right. You can make it work, but it's not going to be flawless. And this goes back to my original question of like, what does the USGA and the US Open owe to the spectators? And what do the collective experience of the spectators contribute to the product, the TV product, because there is a commingling there. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on future US Opens and what we can learn from this year's US Open based on the site.
I just think that the USGA doesn't need to reinvent the wheel here on how we make decisions going forward in terms of where we should play something like the US Open. Now, am I immediately saying that we should not be going to LACC? Not at all. But, we get in this weird sort of mindset of like, oh, we tried this and okay, we need to like keep trying different stuff. And, I think we have a pretty good playbook on the places that are working really nicely. And Look, by and large, like I think that's the mindset that's being taken going forth, using some of these anchor sites. Some of the places that have worked out well, we are going back to. There's some places that haven't worked out that well that we're not going back to. But you know, I just think that like you get a pretty good look at what a course is going to give you for a US Open when you play it there. And so like the country club to me last year, like I think we should be going back there, you know. I've heard really great things about the work that's been done at Chambers Bay. I don't think that we should be hosting a US Open there. I think LACC probably falls somewhere in between. Like they're already back on the schedule, and I think that they'll take some notes from this, and 2039 will be freaking awesome because the course is more than good enough. But I just don't think it needs to be that complex. You know, the one of the debates that I heard this weekend, honestly, I don't think it's just the way that people put it forth maybe didn't make as much sense, but I heard the whole like LACC versus Torrey Pines. It's like, well, look, let's get a couple things very, very straight here. LACC is about 80 times better as a golf course than Torrey Pines from an architectural standpoint. However, if we're going to sit here and have the conversation of what is the better US Open venue, like, okay, that there's an argument there. Like, being completely honest, I think there is. Torrey Pines, like, you've got all the room in the world for a ton of fans. Clearly hard enough. There is very interesting golf down the stretch. Is it much of a golf course? Like, for my money, not really. Is it much of a US Open golf course? Yeah, I think it is. So I just think that we need to look at each venue when we host an event there and say, what did it give us? And try to step away a little bit from like what exactly the tournament was. You know, Torrey Pines, like there's a pretty decent argument to be made that the real reason we think it's a great open venue is because we staged the 2008 US Open there, and you know, the cat was the cat. And so, you know, stepping away a little bit from things like that, it's like, okay, well, who identified themselves that week? I mean, I got the leaderboard right here. Wyndham Clark's still leading, but he's not going to be there at the end of the week. We know that. Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, Tommy Fleetwood. Great golf courses, great championship golf courses identify the best players. You're not that far off right there. I mean, you've got some horses at the top of the board. And so anyone saying that this is like not identifying the right guys or is not fit for the US Open, from a pure golf course standpoint, I'm not there for that. Now, again, the spectating situation was tough. It was not a great course for it. But you know what? I went to Pinehurst in 2014. It was equally as hard in a lot of ways. It's really, really tough to see much golf at Pinehurst. But to me, that is like it's top three, top four in terms of US Open venues. And we're not going to stop going to Pinehurst. USGA would be the first to tell you that. I think they've got 13 of them on the calendar in the next 100 years. So to some degree, I like your comment that, you know, the US Open by and large is a TV product. And I think that we should probably think about it through that lens every bit as much, if not quite a bit more than the on-course spectating experience.
For sure. Let's kind of break it up here as we close out this discussion. As I was mentioning kind of in the dirt segment, LA has a lot to offer off course. I know a lot of guys getting into the heat of things are pretty much on the P's and Q's, like fully dialed in. But in terms of off course stuff, who's getting the most out of their week? Who's wringing the most out of the towel in terms of on course, off course stuff? Now let's talk about guys who are making the cut. Like I know JT is probably not making his way up the Travelers yet, but like Morikawa is an interesting guy. He knows this area really well. He's 1 under today, like climbing up into the top 10. What do you think Morikawa is doing after his rounds? Like I find it hard to believe he's doing like TV dinners. Like he's going out somewhere to eat. Where's he going?
I'll tell you what Morikawa's doing. He's hitting up Sawtelle, baby. You remember Sawtelle, Sujita Annex? That's what he's doing. It's like one of the best concentrations of just great Asian food, like all sorts of different types of Asian food. I mean, they have places that are dedicated to just simply soba noodles. You know, it's not just your pho shop and your ramen shop and all that. Like we've got a straight up place that serves nothing but cold soba noodles. Like it's that deep in the game. I can guarantee you that's where Morikawa's at because he's done videos and stuff of that being like his spot in LA. I saw JT Poston yesterday morning sipping a coffee, but kind of a tough scene. I was sitting in Phil's and I saw Poston walk by sipping a coffee from somewhere else. So unless he had good walk, clearly just made a tough choice
He's
because
just not getting it done.
yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, when you're playing Augusta and you see someone over at Augusta Country Club, it's like, hey, look, I've heard it's a great course, but like, just you're losing this game, brother.
Well, Tommy's just got Tommy Fleetwood. Shout out to Tommy today. Just absolutely crushing it. 7 under 63. That'll do. I mean, Tommy's just got to be in love. Brett's just not getting it done on the food side. And then you come over to LA and you just got options out the wazoo. I'd love to get Tommy on the tie and see what he's into on the food
Yeah, but
front.
he's from Northwest England. That accent is just brutal. I mean, you have at it if you want him, but I don't know if I can handle that. The Liverpool accent. I don't know if you're privy to that sort of stuff, but it's tough to listen to. It's also tough to understand, to be frank.
I'd hang with Tommy for an hour. I mean, that's just not a hard task, you know? Like, maybe it's not the best accent in the world, but I've got my own faults.
What's the first question you ask Tommy Fleetwood? Pretend I'm Tommy.
What's your last name? Fleetwood or Shelby? No, I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to do a deep dive on Tommy. I'm sure there's lots to be curious about, but I wouldn't want to talk about golf, which is kind
Is he
of
a hunchback?
exactly why we're here.
I think that's the
It's
first
a
question
good,
I'd ask him. It's like,
it's a good
are you a
call.
hunchback?
He
I
does
mean,
not
it's
have
weird.
great
When
posture.
he gets over the ball, it's like the shoulders are like this. I think there's something going on there. He hits
He must have
dingers though. Dingers.
shortened clubs of some sort. Like they've
Yeah.
got to be a
He's a little
couple inches
guy.
shorter. Yeah.
I would love to know the psychology of a small golfer. Tommy's caddy is like 6'6" and a tank.
Yeah.
He
Big
literally
boy.
is like double the size. Like, what's the psychology there? Do you want someone that's like way bigger than you if you're a little guy? Like, does the
Oh, for
contrast do
sure.
something for you out there?
Yeah, he
What
can
about if
see
you're a
over
big guy
bunkers
though?
that Tommy
If you're a
can't
big
see
guy, do
over.
you want like a tiny little, it's like the Henrik Stenson with Franny, whatever, Fanny, little old lady. Like, what's the psychology of choosing a caddy when it comes to pure size? I'm not talking about golf. We don't care about golf here.
It's just a different perspective. You got Big Bird and you got somebody hanging out low on the ground. Like you might as well have two perspectives when you're out there rather than one. If you're both the same height, it's just not it. And if I was a short player like Fleetwood, I'd want a big guy carrying my bag. I don't think caddies are out there complaining, but if you're 6'6", like, you should be able to handle a golf bag.
I've heard guys say that before, like that they just in a general sense that they like to have like a big guy out there. You feel like you have someone that's like going to battle with you, and you got a
Yeah.
dog out there with you. Which I mean that makes some sense. So we're losing the plot. We always do. Speaking of losing the plot, Ricky is officially losing the plot. I might jump out the window. I hate this. But there is a silver lining here. Wyndham Clark still has the lead. He's not winning. Wyndham Clark's not winning the US Open. So I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not what's happening right now.
Well, shit, man. It was a three-horse race. We'll call it a three-horse race with sticky Ricky still in. But we're through six. We got a lot of golf to play. I guess we're through seven for Rory. But let's just call it Ricky, Rory, and Wyndham. And I think the
Dude,
writing's on the wall, Henry Shimp.
I still think Chef Daddy is just dangerous. Six back. He's about to do some bad things. I just am feeling it.
Dude, that hole out
Shoffley,
on 17
I
yesterday
don't think
was
there's any chance.
fucking
Shoffley's
ridiculous.
at 6 under as well, but we'll see. Yeah, it was a hell of a hole out. We've lost the plot. Mudball Monday. Thank you for joining us as always. Got an
Happy
episode
Father's
coming
Day.
on Thursday. Walker, who's coming on Thursday?
Shit, I mean we got multiple recordings. Lee Wybranski is going to be joining us. Super excited to have Lee on. We had a great conversation. This was prior to the US Open, and Lee was out there. If any of you were out at the
Saw
US
Lee
Open,
yesterday. He was grinding.
fantastic. Just love his stuff. I mean, I was back at home this weekend, and as I was talking to him, like, any of you who have US Open or PGA or Masters, the Open posters, they're just a great addition to any golfist. As you know, we're big fans of a nice little golfist, but what I love about Lee's posters is that they're more than often, if you're going to have anything leave the golfist and make its way into other parts of the house, like Lee's posters are a pretty attractive thing to have, sitting in a mud room or something else. So it was really interesting. I mean, I'm always curious with artists to just hear their perspective on their creative process and how they do their work. Lee not only shared some great thoughts on his creative process, but also personally, you know, he's down in Flagstaff. So it was just really cool getting to understand him better. And yeah, looking forward to potentially meeting up with Lee, and just a big fan. So tune in. That'll post Thursday at midnight, and we'll keep you posted throughout the week. Stay blessed. Mudball Monday.
Mudball Monday.